One for Thursday.
I call this meeting to order. Please stand for the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, well, that was a fail. I wasn't watching the clock, so sorry about that.
Okay, may we have the roll call?
Councilmember Deedy?
Oh, I don't know where she is.
I haven't heard from her. Councilmember Oglesby?
Here.
Councilmember Wisnowski?
Here.
Councilmember Stout?
Here.
Councilmember De Leon?
Here.
Councilmember O'Donnell?
Here.
Councilmember Page?
He's been excused.
And I'm wondering if Councilmember Deedy didn't send us something. I'll go back and look, because for some reason now I'm recalling maybe she did send something in, but I could be wrong, Mayor. I'll go back and look.
Okay. So the first two items on the agenda are the comprehensive plan update and our sensitive areas ordinance. And that will be Ms. Cancade, and she's going to introduce our new community development director, Mona Davis.
Hello, council members. This is Mona Davis. I'll just move my screen over here. Mona's first day was today, and she will be taking my position over. As you know, that I am going to be going to the city of DuPont on December 1st.
I'm happy to be here. And hello, Nancy. I know we go back from my meeting.
Well, welcome, Mona. We have a lot of work for you to do.
Welcome aboard, Mona.
Yes, I'm not going to be
welcome
for sure. Oh, goodness. Well, for tonight, nothing substantive about what I wanted to talk to you about. I just felt that it would be helpful for you, since we have new council members, to just sort of have a informal discussion about the comprehensive plan amendment and the sensitive area ordinance. We are working on amendment and update on December 17. You will have these two ordinances in front of you. And I thought it would be helpful just to kind of give a really high level overview and tell you, what we found when we went through and looked at what needed to be amended, and kind of like the why are we doing these amendments, and generally what are we looking at. And I just thought it would be useful for you to start out for those of you that may not have any familiarity with the Growth Management Act. That's our guiding document here in Washington State for planning. There are 13 goals in the Growth Management Act. It's found in the Revised Code of Washington, RCW 3670A, includes urban growth, reducing sprawl, transportation, housing, economic development, property rights, processing permits in a timely and predictable manner, maintaining your natural resource base, open space, recreation, protecting the environment, involving citizen participation and coordination, public services and facilities that they need to be adequate at the time of development for occupancy or use. You can't decrease level of service, and historic preservation. So those are the general planning goals that we work with in our comprehensive plans under the Growth Management Act. So the comprehensive plan, it contains, this is also found in RCW 3670A, it has mandatory elements or chapters that all counties and cities must be including and in their comprehensive plans. And those elements are the land use chapter, housing, capital facilities, utilities. There's supposed to be a rural element, but that's just for counties. I know in the past we've had folks talking about, resource lands, and that's not a requirement for cities. That is only for counties. Transportation, economic development, parks, and recreation. So our comprehensive plans have to be coordinated with the regional goals, with the state planning goals under the GMA. They have to be consistent internally and consistent, you know, really with the countywide policies and goals. And we have a regional planning agency that's the Puget Sound Regional Council. So there's kind of a lot of layers, and it's really one big web of trying to put these all together so that they fit in a way that is, you know, like I said, coordinated and consistent throughout. Also, in addition to comprehensive plans, we are also required to have a natural resource, the critical areas or sensitive areas ordinance. So we are also required as part of that under GMA to protect our sensitive areas. So as you know, we have a legal requirement to update the comprehensive plan, or at least to review and take action to update if anything needs to be updated every 8 years. We had a periodic update that was due in 2015 of our comprehensive plan, and we finished the adoption process in 2019. So our next comprehensive plan periodic update that's required by the state is coming in 4 years. So in 2024, we will have to do this process all over again. That's the update. So that's the mandated required, this periodic update. And the purpose of that is, as you know, things change, and comprehensive plans are supposed to be dynamic documents. And while they are a 20-year vision, you know, 20-year long range look at things, the thought is that things do change, and that laws change and circumstances change, and that it is important for that document to be reviewed and updated every 8 years, just to accommodate any legal changes or anything that may have occurred in the last 8 years. We are allowed to amend the comprehensive plan once a year. There are a few circumstances where you can do an amendment more than once a year, but rule of thumb is once a year, unless it's tied to your budget or a sub-area plan. So what we're looking at this year is
Can I interrupt you a second just to let the city clerk know that Tammy Deedy is now present?
Thank you. So the ordinance that you will have in December is an amendment, an annual amendment. And so that is something that why we needed to do an amendment after we just adopted our update in May is because we are required to have the Puget Sound Regional Council certify our comprehensive plans, as well as the Department of Commerce. So PSRC is the acronym for that, Puget Sound Regional Council. The PSRC, they're the regional planning agency. And when we sent our updated plan to them, they partially certified it. They came back with a lot of complimentary thoughts about the work that we had done, but there were a few things that they wanted us to change. So this year's amendment is very narrowly focused on changing those items that Puget Sound Regional Council asked us to address. And I'll get into those in a moment. The reason why we're doing our sensitive area ordinance update is because it was never done. It needed to be done for compliance with the Growth Management Act after we, either in tandem with or right after we did our required periodic update. So we were lagging behind because obviously, you know, it was 2019 when we got the comp plan done. And so now we're trying to catch up with that sensitive area ordinance update. The good news, though, is that the sensitive area ordinance that we have in place now was in pretty good shape. So, and please stop me along the way if you have questions, because that's what this is really all about, just for me to give you a real nice overview of what you can expect and to ask the kind of questions that the curiosities, I guess, now in this informal workshop forum. I think that things that you may be curious about, it might be nice to have that discussion before you're in a full council meeting and I'm asking you to pass an ordinance. So that's my thought there. But in our sensitive area ordinance, basically the sensitive areas ordinance, it lives in Black Diamond Municipal Code Chapter 1910, which regulates wetlands, fish and wildlife conservation areas, geologically hazardous areas, critical aquifer recharge areas, and frequently flooded areas. And you know, was it 2 weeks ago I brought the floodplain ordinance to you? So that's just part of our sensitive areas. But the regulations for flood development are actually in a different chapter, in chapter 15, but they are protected under the sensitive area ordinance in chapter 19. So when we have these updates to do, the State Department of Commerce starts the process out with a checklist. They give the jurisdictions their checklist. They say, you need to look at what laws have changed, what things are now required to be in your sensitive area ordinance or in your comprehensive plan, and you go through the checklist and you compare. So as I said, the sensitive area ordinance was in really good shape. And so the very, very minor changes to it, the things that we needed to change in this update to make it compliant is we had to adopt the 2014 wetland rating system. Our current sensitive area ordinance has adopted the 2004 wetland rating system. We are proposing to add the regulation of priority species and priority habitats. These are identified by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Priority Habitat and Species Program. It's the PHS. And it's just got some language in there that instead of just looking at federally protected animals, we will also use the state PHS list when we do environmental reviews to make sure that we are protecting species, priority species or habitats that are important in Washington State and in King County. It narrows it down by county even. And then finally, we had definitions that were missing in our currently adopted sensitive area ordinance. So we had to add definitions for critical areas, actually, critical aquifer recharge, what a fish and wildlife habitat conservation area is, what a frequently flooded area, a geologically hazarded area, and habitat of local importance. So definitions are super important when you're trying to apply or interpret regulations. Obviously, when someone says, well, what do you mean by that? If you don't have a definition to show them, this is what we're talking about, it makes it very difficult. Those were really the high points of what will be coming forward on December 17 with proposed changes to the city sensitive area ordinance.
Barb, how much difference was there between the 2004 standard and the 2014 standard? I mean, was there a lot of changes or was it mostly small stuff or?
It's a different way to rate it. And actually we have a comparison, and that's a great question, Council Member Wisnowski, because that would be helpful for me to include in your council packet so you can see. It doesn't really change things, but the calculation, the comparison, it's just a different.
So the model they use is different to do the comparisons?
Yeah, the way that they rate it is different. It used to be just a real numerical, and now it's broken out a little differently.
That'd be great to see.
Yeah, I'll include that in your packet. Thanks for bringing that up. And then the comprehensive plan amendment. So as I said, we had partial certification from PSRC. We need to have that fully certified. And the reason why we're rushing to get this to you before the end of the year is it's not only because the state, you know, we have to do this once a year and we don't want to miss this year, but the PSRC certification is really important for federal transportation funding. We've got to get that full certification to be able to be eligible to apply for federal transportation grants. So the docket, you passed the docket, but just as a refresher to you on the amendment docket, we have five things that we looked at. We had chapter 3, which is our parks, recreation, trails, and open space chapter. When we were formatting the 2019 comprehensive plan, we actually lost some language in there that we're adding back in about our commitment to providing equal access under Title II of the Americans with Disability Act for our parks, recreation, and trails system. That was inadvertently, I don't know if it got just, you know, we moved something and it got covered up, we're not sure, but we want to put that back in chapter 4 for the natural environment chapter. We lost policy number 21, which is using LID or low impact development techniques to manage stormwater runoff. We never wanted to delete that. I think that one we had a picture, a really nice picture that we moved when we were formatting and it covered it up. We had in chapter 5, which is land use, we had some sort of Scribner's errors and things like that, but we also in response to PSRC's comments about the target numbers being so off. So just to back up, the compliance or consistency with the regional and the countywide policies has to do with planning for target numbers for population, housing, and jobs. And in Puget Sound Regional Council puts out this vision, which is this, you know, big metropolitan regional planning thing. Well, it all comes down to our city was never really, we never got caught up when the MPDs were permitted. And we are now really required to, we're committed to this, all of these housing units. We never really were able to resolve that difference with the PSRC model and the King County countywide target numbers. So PSRC wanted to see us, number one, make a commitment. So I'm gonna be asking council to consider a resolution committing to the fact that you are not going to look for new lands to annex or develop out until the target number situation is resolved and that we're more in line. I also did an audit of Chapter 5 land use to see if there was anything that looked like it was inconsistent with our commitment to try to get those target numbers in line. And so we have a few things that we'll be talking about in more detail. There isn't much, but you know, things like not building or, you know, not trying to annex the areas that are like our urban growth area until we catch up with those target numbers. But the good thing is that we have started the planning process with King County on realigning those target numbers. So I think the combination of looking at the Office of Financial Management, they are the ones that come up with the new population projections. Obviously, there's growth everywhere, and divvying those population numbers up amongst the cities, getting PSRC to acknowledge the master plan development housing units that we're committed under, that are permitted. Those things will, it's not going to happen overnight, but there's an understanding that we will be able to eventually align where we need to be. So, but that's in the works now. It's a sort of a different process, but we needed to take a look at and review our land use chapter to see if there was something that we were out of line or out of sync that we could fix. And then the transportation chapter, which is 7, we had some information in our comp plan that was not accurate, and PSRC pointed that out. We had some text referencing a corridor study that was done by the Department of Transportation that resulted in them thinking they would widen SR 169. That corridor study was never completed. And to date, the state we know has no intention of widening SR 169. So we needed to remove that bad information. They also wanted us to acknowledge that SR 169 is designated as a highway of statewide significance. It's, you know, some, just more information that's accurate. We will be putting that in. And they also wanted us to have a more detailed explanation of a contingency plan to address any potential funding shortfalls that could occur if the MPD improvements were not completed, because we have a solid agreement with the master plan developer and a phased implementation schedule. We have no reason to think that that won't pan out. And so in our comprehensive plan, a lot of those policies and the funding strategies are based on the master plan developer funding those improvements. But PSRC said, yeah, that's probably fine, but we still want to see plan B. What's your plan B if something falls through? What's your contingency? So we worked on that. And you'll be seeing that in the draft that's recommended when it comes to you. But there are things like, you know, we hadn't, at the time that we adopted the comprehensive plan, we hadn't committed to a transportation impact fee. And now we are working on that. So we put that in as a, you know, that if any developer would need to be paying into transportation improvements through the transportation impact fees, things like that, more coordination with our neighbors, regional coordination. So it's that sort of thing that we put some more detailed explanation about what we could do. Also, when the city is over 5,000 in population, we are eligible for different monies for transportation funding. We put that language in. So we just tried to add, you know, just kind of bolster. We didn't take anything away, but we just tried to bolster and add some clarification and some potential contingency options. And that's, and I have actually sent that draft to the PSRC, and they were pretty comfortable with what we had proposed. So really that's what you'll be seeing on December 17th. And just a little bit about process. The Planning Commission has already held their public hearing on the sensitive area ordinance update. And we have a recommendation ready to go to you. The Planning Commission has just completed workshopping on the comprehensive plan amendments. And we have a notice that'll go out in the paper for 2 consecutive weeks, beginning next week, for a public hearing that they will hold on December 1. So the Planning Commission has just been just champs about this. They're holding a special meeting on December 1 to have the hearing. They're going to hold their regularly scheduled meeting a week later on December 8th to deliberate and hopefully be able to formulate a recommendation for you on December 17. So it's a very, very crunched time frame here. But that's what we're working with. And I just invite any questions that you may have. Go ahead.
Councilmember Stout.
Thank you. unmute that way. Thank you for a really good overview, Barb. You have had to play catch up on this comprehensive plan, the critical areas ordinance, and various different bits and pieces of this for, you know, a couple of years now. We had a couple years of stall when there were some interesting governmental things going on in Black Diamond. Do you think that with this update and finishing the CAO and adding the transportation element that you've just talked about, do you think that we're in a position to call ourselves caught up? And then from here on out, it will be the regular annual update and then jump right back in for the four-year amendment.
Whatever. There is one more piece that's hanging out there. I wish I could say yes.
Okay.
But the last piece of this is going to be bringing the development regulations through and the zoning map, because the comprehensive plan update resulted in some land use changes, land use designation changes on our comprehensive plan land use map, area wide. But when we came through following that with the changes to the zoning map, we had several citizens that really hadn't recognized when we took the comprehensive plan through the process that these changes were being made. So a lot of times people don't really think, they don't, you know, planning is kind of like what it's just, so what are you talking about? But when you start bringing in zoning changes, then that makes sense to a lot of people. They understand that. So we will still need to address that at the first of the year. And then I should say Mona will be addressing that the first of the year, and then we will be all in good shape. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do with our development regulations and design standards and park plan update, but we will be compliant with the Growth Management Act.
Thank you for that work so much, Barb.
Thanks.
Councilmember Deedy.
So, hey, Barb, I just have a quick question about, you know, you were talking about resolved differences. So what, can you go into a little bit more detail on that? When they say, you know, don't annex in any more property because in the urban area, because then you can potentially build in that area. Is that what they're worried about? More housing? And if right now it's just about the MPDs, I'm assuming they also know about, you know, the senior housing out at Lake Sawyer, some more apartments outside of 10 Trails, housing that's being wanted to put in up on 169, I think, apartments. So all of that is being mentioned to PRSC and the state that they know, you know, we already have, like, Palmer Cook and Cole has property that they're eventually going to build houses on. So all of that is compiled already. And they're just saying, okay, we know all this. We just got to get it resolved to match both sides. And then in the meantime, don't annex anything. Although I don't think we're going to annex anything in anytime soon, but they just want the city to hold off. Correct? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the difficult situation really is that, you know, cities are supposed to be urban areas. They're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to be the place where you have houses and jobs. Mm-hmm. But the Vision 2040 and now Vision 2050 from PSRC, it has sort of set out this path of, well, these are core cities and they should be this size. And when you get out to these small cities, they're still considering that small cities should be small cities. So, and just to give you a number, the second that I've had my first caucus with King County and setting these growth targets, nine little cities that meet the small city thing, I think. But anyway, but most of the population, so the way it works is the OFM comes up with the projection, and then it gets split up by counties, in the state. And then the counties work with the cities to divvy up where most of the population should go. Obviously, most of the, something like 60 some percent is gonna go in the metro cities, then the core cities. And then the next group of cities are like those that have high transit. They get more population. So when you get down to a little city like ours, we are not expected to grow by very much. So that target number exercise that we're just embarking on is, and the reason of course is that, you know, you look out at terms of like the public transportation isn't as good and road infrastructure isn't as good and all of that. So we hope in this cycle, because everyone admits that when the MPDs were coming online and we were starting to look at the numbers, the target numbers, they kind of punted, like nobody knew what to do with Black Diamond. And now that this is real, the MPDs have been, you know, they exist. We all have to take off our blinders and we have to figure out a way collectively in the county to recognize that in these target numbers. So the idea, you know, it's still like, we're just starting this exercise, but the idea is that, and there's still some confusion about what's that target number? Is it the minimum? Is it the maximum? What happens if you exceed it? And interestingly enough, I participated in the Pierce County and the King County target setting, and even amongst counties, there's different ideas about what that means. So we do need to try to figure out a way so that we are projecting a number that is coordinated with the county policies and with the regional agency.
So let's say that 10 Trails builds out and we're at the projected over 20,000 residents, right? And then you have all the other buildings going on, all the other homes being built within the city. Let's say, you know, in 5 years, Palmer Coke and Cole jumps in. So is there a point where PRSC or anybody says, wait a second, you guys are growing like really fast and we need you to put a moratorium on building homes, or you need to look at, you know, you need to step back and figure out how to not grow so fast, or I mean, so what, I just don't know how you can say you can't build when you're.
No, because remember, one of the 13 goals of the Growth Management Act is to protect private property rights.
Yeah.
But you cannot just say, so that is something, Councilmember Deedy, that is a real question in a lot of people's minds. How is this going to end up? Because we know that Covington, for example, exceeded theirs. Many cities are saying, well, what you know, we are, first of all, we have a housing shortage, number one. So on one hand, you're telling us we got to build enough houses to support the people, but then you're saying, oh, but you're building too many houses. So it's really, really not clear to me. I guess I can't even answer your question, because I don't think any of us really knows how that's going to play out.
Right.
Councilmember De Leon.
Yeah, thank you. I think at this point, I'm just like, my number of questions is kind of growing. I might have roughly three. We'll see where this takes us. The first question might actually be in just in relation to what you were starting to answer with Councilmember Deedy. I'm curious to know what mechanisms we have in place right now for working with the county with those kinds of targets, right? Because it does sound like a lot of the a lot of the decision making or a lot of the apparatuses in place are kind of for larger cities. And I'm wondering, to your knowledge and from your expertise, where would a city like Black Diamond fit in with future planning for King County, so that we do get more accurate numbers or more in-depth conversations with cities like ours, if that question makes sense?
It does. And so, and that's what I was sort of describing, is that we've had our second meeting with King County and the cities in King County. And it's a caucus of, they've broken it down to the small cities caucus. So we had our first one on Tuesday. And so that is really where they say, and in fact, the demographer from King County is willing to come and do a presentation. And I think that might be really helpful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I'd love to.
Because what they basically done is a demographer, calculation based on, they can explain exactly how they came up with the percents of where the population should go. And I think that might be helpful, but that process is right now underway. And so we will be participating in that from here on out. And that is something that I think in the past, perhaps maybe we weren't at the table as often as we should have been with that county coordination, but that is, we're really committed to doing that now.
I mean, cause it sounds like, again, that's a good opportunity for sort of aligning, where we're going, and then also just making sure that it is clear with the county, which is, I think, what kind of comes to that discussion, even with the habitat protection, is making sure that there's enough stop gaps in place or that we are able to enforce a lot of these protections or a lot of these codes more efficiently. So no, I would absolutely love to hear more about what that would look like, talking with a demographer and what the Small Cities Caucus would look like, because I think that's a really helpful direction for us to go, is just to really kind of tune into that and see what we can say on behalf of like our city's needs, so that we are not inadvertently overlooked in a big county's planning.
Right.
Scheme.
I'll work with Brenda to see when there might be an opening at your, most up recent, the next council meeting, where maybe we can get that on the agenda to have that presentation, because it's pretty interesting, the spread, it's very heavy on numbers, but it will at least let you understand where this is all coming from. It's like, there's 9,000 additional people that they want to divvy up amongst the small cities. Okay, so how does that, that's what we're talking about in these caucuses right now.
Fascinating, yeah. Well, yeah, keep us posted. I think that actually does go a little bit into the question I was almost starting to allude to a little bit, with just some of the updates to, wetlands rating systems and using terms more like the habitats of local importance. What do you foresee? I obviously, beyond the fact that, that's helping us to just clarify and tighten a lot of things that we're already doing, where do you think, trying to think exactly the best way to phrase this, but where do you think would be the most benefit to that? And were there potentially a lot of lost benefits for not, just simply not being able to get to this any sooner?
Lost benefits in terms of maybe loss of habitat or something like that?
Loss of habitat, or just we weren't able to do as good of code enforcement as we would like, if it made any challenges for zoning, anything like that. I mean, it's a very broad question, I realize, but.
Well, I mean, I think that we were able to have enough, with the state, regulations and federal regulations that we have in place, where there were gaps in our own code, we were able to make interpretations for example, environmental violations and things like that. So I don't think that was really a problem. Mm-hmm. I think that it just makes it riskier. Let me put it that way.
Sure.
Because if you don't have really good, clear regulations and you're making an interpretation that somebody disagrees with, then that's more risk, right? They could come back and say, we disagree and we're going to appeal or we're going to sue or whatever. And it makes it more difficult. So I don't think that we really lost any ground. I just think that it's a risk factor.
It's risk mitigation.
Exactly.
That's okay. And that's kind of a helpful way to put it, I think, even if there were those who'd have questions about timing or some of the costs and benefits and all that. So that's good to hear. And I think the last question, at least for right now, is actually, this is a really good opportunity if there aren't any others who tune in or listen later. Could you describe a little bit more about what it would mean to us as a city to have State Route 169 designated as a highway of statewide significance?
Oh, it is already designated. Right. Yes. And so really what that means is that, first of all, the city of Black Diamond, cities cannot change the level of service standards on roadways that are designated as HSS, highways of statewide significance. We do not have any control over level of service. So I know that we have folks that are, they talk a lot on the transportation side of things and level of service, and gosh, we should get tougher. And if you raise the level of service, then but we don't have that flexibility on a highway of statewide significance. So that's number one. The other thing about highways of statewide significance is that designation, it prioritizes the state's funding a little bit differently because it is such an important thoroughfare to connect through the metropolitan area. So it kind of elevates its importance in terms of, hopefully funding, but also, things like, besides level of service, I guess things like speed limits or stopping. The state doesn't want to see people having to slow down or stop on thoroughfares that are significant to move people back and forth between cities. So that's one thing, its importance to move people is probably a higher priority than other roadways in the state. So they're going to consider changes that way. It's like, if we were, signalization is one thing, or, when you start talking about some of this development that's going on SR 169, well, they have to have anything that they're going to do on that highway has to go through DOT. And so their review is acceptance of any changes to the highway are going to be based on that designation of statewide significance. If that makes sense to you. I don't work.
It does.
Was there any other questions? So if you have questions between now and the meeting next Thursday, be sure and get a hold of Barbara and ask any questions. You might develop something after this, if this is the first time you've heard this, so you might think of something else.
Oh yeah, please do, because that comprehensive planning and all that stuff, it gets really, there's a lot of moving parts. So if you do have any questions, please get a hold of me. And then just final word on process is the Planning Commission holds a hearing. They make a recommendation to City Council. And council members, you have the option of accepting their recommendation as they've given it to you and adopting the changes. You can make minor changes, of course, or you could even opt to hold your own public hearing and take testimony on your own if you felt that was necessary. So those are kind of your options that you will have to think about when you receive this recommendation from the Planning Commission.
Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda is to discuss our legislative agenda. And last year, I think it was the first year we did one. And we've kind of had the same subject materials on ours that have been on CLTC, Southeast Area Legislative Transportation Commission, Maple Valley and Covington, because we all use the same highways. So we've kind of used the same ones. We've made a big focus on Highway 18 because a lot of people take Highway 18 and they've had a lot of deaths recently. And so we had a meeting Tuesday morning with Southeast Area Legislation Transportation Commission, which includes the chambers and the mayors from Black Diamond, Covington, Maple Valley, Issaquah, North Bend, and Snoqualmie. So all the chambers and all the mayors are involved with this process of trying to get this 18. So they were supposed to meet with a legislature today, a committee that was selected from this group today to figure out what the ask was going to be. So when I get that verbiage from them, which will probably be in the next day or two, then I will pass that on for our ask for 18. But what happened was three people from WashDOT came to talk about the different segments of 18 and what they're working on. So they've got a program that's already been mostly funded for the I-90 interchange. Then they have funded part of the project that we asked for from Hobart Issaquah Road to the Raging River, thinking that the I-90 project was going to go to the Raging River. Well, because of fish passage, they can only go, which is, it's not quite a mile. I don't know what the measurement is, but it's short. It goes to Deep Creek, and between Deep Creek and the Raging River is going to be, it's a $60 million shortfall. So instead of talking about $285 million for our project, we are going to try to put it all together in one project from I-90 to Hobart Issaquah Road for $550 million. They've already funded $250. We need the rest of the money to finish that project that's been on their agenda for many, many years. And they don't want to break it up into three pieces and do it piecemeal. They want to put all of the dollars together. So that they were going to discuss that today, and then CLTC was going to come out with a new statement, and then we aren't going to copy their whole one, but we're going to try to put that together as one package for Highway 18. So we're all giving the same message. So when our legislative agenda goes out to the legislators, we all have the same message, and it's all the people that utilize that corridor for safety and the movement of freight. So those are the two critical things. Is it's very dangerous, and there's many deaths, and there was just another death in October again. So, and the fire department tried to get it out in the news, and they didn't want it in the news, so they kind of blocked it. But one of the ladies the fire districts from the different cities are involved also, because they have to respond to the accidents on Highway 18. So anyway, that part of the ask, I'm going to ask that we wait till we get the message back from CLTC so we can incorporate that in, and I will send it out to everybody once I get that wording, and we can kind of maybe have a committee that just works on what that paragraph is going to say about Highway 18. And then on the bottom where we have the culverts, Seth and I have been working with the flood control district, and they're going to give us, so we got on their capital budget last year, and so they're going to fund a bridge. They don't want culverts. So they're going to give us a grant to fund a bridge. And the flood control district has a lot of money. So they have big budgets. And you know, they're trying to preserve fish passage and wildlife. So this is a big, big win for us, because this is going to be a big project. And anyway, Seth's working with them right now to get that grant so that we can move forward on the bridge. And then we'll have to close Lake Sawyer Road for I don't know how long, but we're going to have to close it in order to get access for them to be able to take the culverts out and put a bridge in. And I think everybody is going to be happy with that resolution. The people that live there, and the guy that lives across the street that's not really in Black Diamond, but he gets flooding, and he's had two cars in Covington Creek that have gone off the edge of the road, and we will get we will get guardrails, and it'll be a really good addition to our road projects. So anyway, that's the other things I wanted to change. And then I wanted to make sure that Brenda had the correct council members, because they're not correct on the legislative agenda. So does anybody want to, Christiana?
Yeah, I would, if there is any sort of conversation or meeting for a committee to just kind of hash out that paragraph, I would be happy to be part of that. It sounds like a very good way to just kind of band together for a really big project like that. But I'd be happy to work with that if okay. that to that.
Councilmember Stout.
Thank you for kind of doing the groundwork for us, Mayor. We did receive the Covington and Maple Valley versions. And I have to say, I think they do a really nice job, but we have historically used this document to hand to our legislators. I don't know if we will ever in our lifetimes hand them a piece of paper ever again.
Email it now.
Right, so now we email it to them. I don't know if it's as effective, but I really think that our one page document, very succinct, is really a good thing to narrow everything down really nicely, make it look good, have good bullet points so that it's readable. The Covington and Maple Valley ones are beautiful, but there are multiple pages and a lot of prose, you know, a lot of paragraphs. And so I really like the format of ours. And if we just stick with the very basic information, that's what our legislators tell us. They want to know what we're asking for. They don't want us to come and tell them a big long story. They want us to snap it out and say, give me the money. Let's do this project for the benefit of Black Diamond and our region and, you know, the rest of the state. So I like this format very much, and I would like to not see it turn into two or three pages.
Thank you. The chamber is going to try to arrange meetings via Zoom with the legislators. So they just don't know how that's going to work out. Councilmember Beattie. You're muted.
Sorry. So I like everything that's on our agenda right now. I did like, just like Aaron stated, that Maple Valley had a nice one. I did like the fact that they had in there the mental health funding for the school districts. Well, mainly just their school district. I thought it would be good for the city of Black Diamond to also have that on our agenda and not just say, you know, funding for mental health, but also say funding for mental health to help, you know, our residents in Black Diamond, but also to support the school districts that are within the city. So to let them know that we support Tahoma's effort or Maple Valley's effort for Tahoma and the Enumclaw and even say Kenton and Auburn, if that's on their agenda as well. I did also like, and I think we've talked about this before, the newspaper, they state that we have to have a newspaper that we put all our information in to notify residents. I did think that it is kind of time for a change and get to be able to put our notifications online on a source online, whether it be on our website or Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, I'm not quite sure how all that works, but I thought that request for the legislators to look at that and to update that a little bit would be good also to put on. So that's all I had.
Councilmember Oglesby.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with the councilman. Mentor Mel, oh gosh, coffee is not working yet. I agree with you, Didi, as well. The mental health is hands down was passionate for me as well when I saw that the Maple Valley one, also, especially with our schools and what we're going through right now. That's very important to me. So I would definitely back you up on that, and hopefully that can get on that list as well.
Is there anybody else? I would attend. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Councilmember De Leon.
Yeah. One of the parts was just on chamber, just inviting the legislators, and I could see something like, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting ahead, or they'll probably already have a really good idea for it, but something with a screen share to just show our documents. I'm also sure that if there was ever a future Zoom session, even with one of our council meetings, we could always invite one, two, or all three legislators to maybe make a presentation or just, talk with us, kind of like how Councilmember Reagan Dunn did. Just like the, I know that was a state of the county, but it might just be another opportunity to just have more direct contact with either our state senator or with one or both of our representatives. So might just be another thought, just to invite and kind of pitch it directly. I know their time is busy, but it could be a few minutes of our time, and then we, you know, it's what they're.
Yeah, since they're not.
Job. Yeah.
If they're not going to be in session, yeah, that makes sense. That maybe we could get a meeting just with them for our own legislative agenda.
Right.
We've never done that before, but there isn't any reason why we couldn't.
Yeah, might be a good opportunity. So one of the benefits, I suppose, of going digital at least is maybe that makes it more possible, but. I would otherwise just agree, you know, as absolutely with the mental health component, since, you know, Tahoma School District is one of our districts here, and there have been a lot of struggles with that, with mental health issues for a long time in a lot of school districts, but I know that's really near and dear to the Tahoma community that's also serving part of Black Diamond. So I know similar areas of the 5th Legislative District have similar issues as well, so I could see that being a nice, again, kind of show of solidarity, because a lot of communities are, pretty much every community has been suffering with it, but yeah, especially now given the circumstances. Yeah. So makes sense.
Anything else? So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Hi, everybody.